Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Welcome to Earth.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Bong. James Bong.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Your move, creep.
Get off my plane.
Get your ass to Mars.
I feel mean. The name's Earth.
I'm your huckleberry.
We see we cut the Kit Kat and haul.
Hey, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to the Everything Ashcast, the podcast for November 16th, 2020. I'm your host, Zach. Joining us, we have Chris.
Hello.
And we got a bunch of stuff diving into this week, so let's jump right in. And we'll kick things off with some trailers. We got the first trailer this week for the new Tom and Jerry movie.
What year is it?
Yes. Welcome to like the 50s,
60s?
But yes, Tom and Jerry, the boys are back. They're in New York City. They're like, it's a live action animated hybrid where Tom and Jerry are very bizarre looking CG, but with like 2D painted over them. Looks like, is it kind of like how I would describe it?
Like it's like Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Although I mean it. Much rougher than that movie, and that movie's like
30 years old. Like, it's incredibly weird. It's like people have made that comparison,
yeah,
and they're like, how do they mess up the technique? Like, is it something with the lighting?
Yeah, because at least in this trailer, like, it feels like Tom and Jerry like are not even close to interacting.
They are ripped out of like a cartoon episode, and not in a good way. It's just like, yeah. They have the same, they don't have any reflective surfaces. There's no consideration of like shadow work. It's just like someone is walking around a cardboard cutout of Tom and Jerry.
Yes.
It's animated, don't get me wrong, but it's just like, what is, it's not blended well. And it's just like the uncanny valley of kind of what the Sonic movie did, where it looks too fake that your brain can't stop staring at the detail that's different. But it's not horrifying yet, you know.
Well, at least Sonic. Well, you're talking about like the original Sonic.
Yeah.
If I changed him.
Yeah, but then it's like, would you prefer Tom and Jerry if it wasn't cartoony? Because like, I kind of like it. I kind of want to see a Tom and Jerry with like Lion King animals.
like realistic Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, if they can make Marmaduke into a live action dog, I don't know why Tom and Jerry have to be a cartoon universe of it.
Yeah. But yeah, we're getting sort of classic Tom and Jerry, I guess.
No, it is. It's
but
still
yeah.
Like a gray cat and, you know, brown mouse.
Yeah. And the plot is that Jerry is living in like the super fancy hotel in New York City, and apparently that's it's going to cause some sort of issue with this like super high profile wedding that's happening at the hotel, and the wedding planner, who's played by like, Chloe Grace Moretz, basically hires Tom to like get rid of Jerry, and then wacky Tom and Jerry hijinks ensue.
The one thing I have about that is that like she hires like a cat to kill a mouse, and
I live in New York.
Well,
I have many questions about like the universe of this movie, because there's also like if it was just Tom and Jerry, like there wouldn't be as many questions, but like there's also like animated elephants.
Yeah.
So it's like how many animated characters are in this world? Like is it full on like framed like Roger Rabbit, where it's just like there's like millions of cartoons living alongside humans in this world?
Like, is it a thing where like cartoon mice are different than real mice? And then what, you know what I mean? Like is it,
yeah.
And you can only hire like cartoon cats to kill cartoon mice, and does that make sense to her?
Yeah.
Or is it something where Tom and Jerry are kind of like known to be Tom and Jerry, so it's like, oh, we have to kill Tom, like we have to kill Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have Tom, like
he's the expert.
Yeah. Also, wasn't the thing about Tom and Jerry was like a house cat, like the
yes.
So
yeah.
When it's like a hotel, like did their owner die? Did the cartoon owner like kick him out?
Yeah.
Because it makes it seem like that in the intro of the trailer.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with the intro either. Like the intro is just like, is like this like unrelated like bit.
End of an error kind of shot where it's like, oh, listen, they're gonna be friends, and turns out, you know, nope. But where did they just come from?
Yeah. Yeah, so many questions that I don't think the movie is gonna even attempt to answer.
I know, but like the fan base for Tom and Jerry is like us now, because we were the generation that they made the Tom and Jerry Kids show.
Are you talking about Tom and Jerry Kids, or like?
Yeah, that was like the new Tom and Jerry trying to be edgy.
Yeah, but I guess the bar. I think the Tom and Jerry bar is set pretty low nowadays, because like I haven't seen them, but I've heard like Tom and Jerry in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and stuff like that. Like that's what they're putting out now as far as like Tom and Jerry movies. I've heard they're like god awful.
I forget. Like Tom and Jerry is just terrible marketing. They dropped the ball on that franchise because I assume it's on Cartoon Network or something, or something in the back of a Walmart bin.
Yeah.
But I have idea where you want to go see Tom and Jerry now.
Yeah, they've been putting out these like bizarre direct-to-video animated movies that are Tom and Jerry, but it's Tom and Jerry just like shoved into other movies. With like no context. It's just like Tom and Jerry in Wizard of Oz, and it's just Wizard of Oz, but then Tom and Jerry are there for some reason.
I give it credit, since that's the, you're right, they do set lower the standard, but then that really tells you how well the like Scooby-Doo movies were when they actually met people and it actually ties it into the plot.
Yeah,
like that just proves how well the Scooby-Doo team knew how to market and keep that franchise like relevant, where Tom and Jerry, I'm just like shitting on them so far. It's not a hard concept, but they just don't know how to, like, make it hip. Because think about it, it's like, is this movie for kids, or is this movie for adults?
It seems like a family movie. It also, it's weirdly, like, it's basically Mouse Hunt, isn't it? It's just like, it's Mouse Hunt with Jerry, like.
Yes, I got that vibe, too, and if you think about it, Mouse Hunt was a better Tom and Jerry movie.
Yeah.
Even though that movie, that mouse made string cheese.
Mm-hmm.
It was the precursor to Ratatouille.
And, so somehow, like, Michael Pena and Ken Jeong and Rob Delaney also got roped into this somehow.
Pena will just be in movies, you know?
Yeah, I feel like... I've seen like the trailers for Fantasy Island, so I feel like he's just like walked up the set of like Fantasy Island and was still doing his like Mr. Rourke voice.
He's not really doing a Mr. Rourke voice. He's just talking slowly.
Yeah.
I've seen that movie. It's not a great movie.
Yeah. And Tim Story directed this Tom and Jerry movie. He directed the Ride Along movies and also the Fantastic Four movies. The first two Fantastic Four movies, so not the best track record with Tim Story, but
he knows how to use characters, I guess. That's like a positive note.
The first Ride Along was okay.
I forget there was a second one.
Yeah, there's a third one apparently coming. It's looking for a March 5th, 2021 release, so hopefully maybe things will be on the road to calming down. Around that time,
we survived COVID just to go in the theaters to watch Tom and Jerry.
The grand return to theaters is to go see Tom and Jerry.
It's not Tenet. It's not Wonder Woman. It's Tom and Jerry.
Yeah. So I guess keep an eye out for that. See if anything changes with that. But yeah, March 5th right now is when you can go see Tom and Jerry back on the big screen. And then we also got a trailer this week for Chaos Walking. Which is the new Doug Liman sci-fi action movie. Obviously I've directed like Edge of Tomorrow and the Bourne movies and stuff like that. And this movie has been in production for a while, or it's been like kind of like it's been in delayed for a while. They originally shot it in 2017, and then in 2018 they were doing test screenings, and the test screenings did awful, so basically did $15 million worth of reshoots, but then they had to wait because this movie stars Daisy Ridley and Tom Holland. They were both very busy with other big Star Wars and Marvel, respectively. So they had to wait until like April of last year to do the reshoots. And then it got delayed until, I think it was supposed to come out in like March last year, but then they got delayed because they had to wait to the reshoots, and then all this other stuff happened, so now it's coming out finally in January next year. But it's based on the first book of a trilogy called it's the Chaos Walking trilogy, but the first book is called The Knife of Never Letting Go.
Okay.
And I don't know what the title is. Patrick Ness is the author, but it's definitely like a weird hodgepodge of very disparate ideas for like sci-fi things. At least this movie version looks like it's like very like disparate ideas. It's like you have a different planet from Earth where all the women have disappeared or died. You have the men who are left, their thoughts, inner thoughts, are like audibly and visually displayed above their heads, or like swirled around their heads. And then you have like different factions on the planet of men. Like there's two groups fighting each other, at least, or like at least two groups fighting each other, it seems like. And then you have Daisy Ridley crash landing on this planet, and then she's like the only woman on this planet. And then like Tom Holland's character has to like basically protect her from like whatever faction wants to kill her or like use her for their own nefarious means.
There's always like a character who's the chosen one.
Yeah.
And it's flip flop between the two. So it's like you have by default no women, and you have one woman named, you know, whatever Daisy Ridley is. So she like the special one. But then Tom Holland is like, well, he is also a special one for some reason.
Yeah, because his like visible thoughts are like secretly like the most powerful thoughts, or he has like some sort of power where like he can make them like
visible?
Yeah, he can like manifest them into like reality. Like he like thinks of a snake and it turns into a snake.
Yeah, and it's like, how is he not the ruler of these men?
Yeah.
Is if that's the standard, it's like, oh, my thought is so loud it comes to life.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not even the movie. It's like that's not just the one plot. It's like, you know, side story.
Oh, and then also there's like a race of aliens that are like attacking them.
Yeah. And that's like a thrown at the last minute again, where it's like, oh, there's like thousands of aliens just hovering around this planet, apparently, just waiting.
Yeah. So yeah, it looks like kind of a mess, and I feel like it's probably gonna be a mess just because of like the path this movie's taken to like theaters.
Oh, this is giving me Artemis Fowl like vibes.
Yeah.
Where it's just so many ideas, so big concepts, like trying to cram it all into one movie.
Mm-hmm.
Where I bet the book probably reads better. You know, it's a lot more explained, a lot more calmer.
Yeah.
But just on screen, you're like, this is so much at once.
I feel like just because it's been delayed for so long, for like so many years too, like I feel like it was, I don't know if this was like trying to like, I think it was like probably like a little bit after like the like kind of Hunger Games, like YA, like bubble. But like this also, it feels like a little bit like it's in that sort of thing of like we gotta
Maze Runner.
Yeah, like this is definitely feels like Maze Runner. But
if you think about it, like I think the Maze Runner series was the last YA that was like good in the city, like the blockbuster. Because I know like the Divergent series the year prior, like,
Crash and Burn,
Crash and Burn, that like no more dystopian kids, no one gives a shit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
At least the Maze Runner was at that point they were like. They were doing things, and they were fighting against something, so it led to something bigger. But Divergent was just like, stop making these movies.
Yeah, Percy Jackson had like two movies, and then
Percy Jackson was better. I liked Percy Jackson. It was like Kids Got a War.
Yeah,
but then
I'm trying to think that there's like I guess Narnia. That like Narnia kind of fizzled out too.
Narnia comes back in like every 10 years, like a new Narnia movie tries again.
Yeah,
and they never get to the end. They always make it to like Prince Caspian and they just stop.
Yep.
There was another movie that was like they were like mutants but not quite.
Oh, well, I mean, there's like a ton of like just like one-offs that like never went anywhere. It was like, it was like I Am Number 4 or something, and like.
Well, that was still in the era. That was still in the era of like YA hot.
Yeah. Times, oh, I think I know what the one you're thinking of. I can't remember the name of it either. But like,
yeah, it was like an African American girl. She had like the power of like just telepathy, I think.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that one. That one like bombed so horribly. Like, yeah, I can't remember the name. I can't remember what it was called. But yeah, that was also based on the book. Yeah.
Yeah, I Am Number 4 though is my favorite because it sounded like a dumb title. It's like, okay, who's number 5 or number 3? Just we'll never know.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Cast Walking. You can possibly check it out in January next year. Although that seems very. optimistic. And also I feel like if any movie was gonna be like just like dumped to like Netflix or VOD or something, it'd be this one, but like I guess it'll be in theaters whatever theaters are open.
Yeah.
And so January 22nd is when they're looking to release this one, so but I guess definitely keep an eye on their date, because I feel like it's gonna change or like not happen at all. And then last trailer this week is that we got a trailer for the new animated DC Universe movie, Batman Soul of the Dragon.
It's funky.
Yes, very funky. It's an Elseworlds story. Basically, it's set in the 70s. Bruce Wayne goes to train with the martial arts master O Sensei. And very, very Bruce Lee 70s kung fu blaxploitation inspired. Michael J. White is reprising his role as Bronze Tiger. Lady Shiva played by Kelly Hugh. You have Richard Dragon played by Mark Dacascos. And they're all learning martial arts together, and then they have to team up to fight like some sort of new threat, which looks like it involves like an army of ninjas and. Maybe Hugo Strange, it seems like, maybe, and then
70s other... Hugo Strange. He's yeah, like and a
other, yeah, other and then other monsters or threats or something.
I'm down for it. It's a little weird that Batman just looks like regular Batman. He doesn't get like a ninja or a karate or a kung fu gi. He's just like, well, I'm comfortable in this.
Yeah, or like a 70s, like a some sort of like zoots, like a pimp suit, like bat suit or something.
Something kind of loud and big.
Yeah. Oh, we should also mention that David Giantoli is voicing Batman / Bruce Wayne, who you might know from Grimm or what was that, like a thousand pieces? There's some ABC drama that he's on right now or something. Or I think it's still on. It might have got canceled. It was sort of like ABC was like, we can do This Is Us.
Oh, like A Million Little Pieces?
Yes, yeah, he's on that show.
1,000 Little Pieces? Not enough, Zach. You need a million.
Yeah. Not enough pieces for the drama that is on that show. But, so it's going to be on digital on January 12th, and you can also grab it on, like, physical media January 26th next year. And... yeah, definitely seems like it's going to be a fun one to check out. And also, Bruce Timm is producing it, and Sam Liu, who's like the main DC Animated Universe director, is directing it. And yeah, I think it's the first Batman movie post the Apocalypse War.
Yeah, like flash forward, flashback that he did again.
Yeah, they basically reset the universe again. So, all new DC animated stuff's coming soon.
All new, all unrelated. Try to keep up again.
Mm-hmm. So, actually, speaking of DC stuff, we got some pretty huge news this week about Wonder Woman 1984, which has been. Like pretty much like it's been constantly debated about is it going to actually hit theaters, is it going to be streaming, is it going to be like premium video on demand, and we got our answer this week, and it's going to be both in theaters and on HBO Max on Christmas Day, and it's not going to be any sort of like premium addition to HBO Max. Like, if you have HBO Max, you can watch Wonder Woman on Christmas Day. It is only going to be on HBO Max for a month, and they're not really clear, like, what's going to happen after that month, if it's just going to, like, vanish again, or if it's going to be, like, available on, maybe it'll still be on HBO Max, but be on different, like, other platforms, too. Like, they didn't really say, like, what their plan is after that month that's on HBO Max.
Just, we got this far. We'll figure it out later.
Yeah. But, yeah, it will also be in theaters that are open on Christmas Day. If you want to go see it in theaters. And it'll also be open internationally, where there is no HBO Max, on December 16th. So yeah, so probably the biggest exclusive for HBO Max, like, of its entire run so far.
Yeah, it's getting worth it.
I wonder if this will do anything to kind of like if this is like enough to like pressure Roku to like finally like give in and like let them have HBO Max and Roku, because Amazon the Fire Stick, they just got HBO Max this week, so Amazon caved. I don't know if this is because of Wonder Woman or not, but you can watch HBO Max on your Fire TV and Fire Stick if you have those devices.
I mean, the streaming wars is getting kind of big and crowded. So
yeah,
I'm kind of like okay with them fighting back on trying to get HBO Max on everything, because then it's the same with Disney. Like, Disney held out and I was just like trying to chokehold everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope it's going to make a statement where it's like, didn't we just become, streaming became new cable basically.
Depending on like if you like what you want to watch and like like you could have like a bill that's like as much as cable.
Because I know Amazon was like, oh, do you want to add HBO to your, like, Amazon Prime? Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you can't add is, like, HBO Max. Like, it just, then it's like, you're just, it's like you got to get the exclusivity now. It's just a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm. But if you have something that can watch HBO Max, definitely get ready for Wonder Woman next month. And so moving on to other news, actually keeping it in the DC world, we got some news about Suicide Squad, direct from Sylvester Stallone's Instagram page. He announced he's going to be in James Gunn's Suicide Squad movie. In an undisclosed role, but he's gonna appear somewhere in that movie. Reunited with James Gunn after Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Which is good, because, like, finally get to see more Stallone and comic stuff, besides, you know, that one cameo he had in Guardians. I just want to know what other things he's gonna play as, because it's not like he's gonna be the action hero. Like, he's definitely going to be like some guy with armor.
I can't even like think of like what DC character Stallone could play, or like what's like Suicide Squad related character he could play.
Is he gonna be the Spot? Or is that
I think there's already someone's playing
something like that, right? Like
Polka Dot Man.
Polka Dot Man, yeah. Okay, so he's not Polka Dot Man. I'm just thinking of something hilarious where you're just like, you know, I don't die in a lot of my movies. Like, all right, so what role do you want?
Yeah.
Maybe he's gonna like try to work it in where Suicide Squad and a little bit of like the escape plan is like fused together. It's the same universe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like, what's his name, like, Ray from Escape Plan?
Oh, yeah, Ray Breslin.
Ray Breslin, just, like, he just shows up in the movie. He's like, I'm trying to escape, too.
I guess it's technically in the same universe still, but, like, just have him be Slipknot again, just have another Slipknot. Just, like, and it's
Slipknot 2.
Yeah, just immediately kill him again.
I'd be down with it. I think it'd be fun to see him again, just to know that he's just, you know, there for 10 minutes or less.
I think is I don't think is Sportsmaster in movie. I don't think I know they have like Javelin Man is going to be in Suicide Squad, but like yeah, I don't think Sportsmaster is, because that might be a fun Stallone thing of just like the guy who's good at sports. Although they did a really good job of making him like a legitimate threat and like Stargirl, like because he was like he had like all these like. They did a really good job of like him using his like sports weapons in like a really like effective way.
It's like Casey Jones.
Yeah, but like with like some sort of like kind of like more like expert level Casey Jones, where like he's like trained like years to like be able to like use like all of his like crazy weapons. And he has like more like he's like exploding baseballs, like exploding hockey pucks and.
Okay, so it's like a Casey Jones with like a aim to kill.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, hopefully we'll find out soon, or maybe we'll have to wait till the movie comes out. But yeah, the Suicide Squad just keeps getting better, or seems like it's getting better and better every time we hear something about it. So definitely one of the most anticipated movies of next year. And then we also got news last week that there is a Short Circuit remake in the works. The 80s classic.
Man, can you believe, like, we live in a world where basically the equivalent of Johnny Five is just my Alexa?
Yeah, how do you update Johnny Five? Like, what does the new Johnny Five look like? Just like one of those big dog like Boston Dynamics robots or something?
I guess, because like Treadmill, like the thing about Short Circuit, which they never show, was how he was able to navigate a lot. Like it was more it was one of those things where they cut really. It's like right when they think they show something really like physical, they just like cut and he's just there. So. Mm-hmm. Also, the noise he would make, like they really edited that movie to not show you that grinding sound that treadmill would make.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, here comes Johnny. Like, oh, Jesus. Like, they haven't mastered lawnmowers to not sound like, you know, a blaze. Like, I can't imagine how a sentient robot isn't quiet. But, yeah, like a boss, he'd just be like a humanoid, I guess, right? If they want to make it classic, but not quite. I'm fine with Short Circuit. It's just one of those movies that it hasn't aged well.
Yeah.
Especially the first movie.
It's very of the 80s.
I don't know. I like the second movie for like the late 80s, early 90s of New York.
Mm-hmm.
The first movie, though, is just all sorts of bonkers of like robot technology and then life or like farm life with the robot.
Well, like what was the actual plan for Johnny, like the Johnny robots? They were basically mobile like laser tripods or something. They were like they were gonna shoot lasers and like kill people on the battlefield.
Yeah, that's why they gave him like a laser strap thing on his back that he like changed. But
yeah,
it became a grappling hook at one point.
Yeah. The military was just gonna send out like Short Circuit robots onto the battlefield and just like have them like shoot lasers at people.
But there's always a good chance one of them could just become sentient.
Yeah, don't send them out into the battlefield if it's raining out or if it's like a lightning storm, because you're gonna get a bunch of like wacky guys coming back.
Yeah, it's just if we shock it, it could just become like it will just leave the battlefield.
Yeah, like the enemy forces just need like a taser or something, and they just like tase the Johnny robot and just be like,
and they're just like, you know what, I'm alive, I don't want to do any war.
Yeah.
And that's we're like,
friends.
That's...
We're friends now. We're gonna like listen to like old R&B songs and like
learn to dance and paint
pop culture. Yeah.
I get it. It's like the idea is fun. I definitely just like I'm a fan of it only because I grew up with it. But it's definitely a hard movie to show to someone new, like someone younger, and just be like, yeah, like this robot's alive. And it's just like, well, my phone's alive.
Yeah. I'm just very curious, like what it like. 2021-2022 Johnny Five looks like.
The thing is, ever since Short Circuit, there have been other movies that are very, like, the premise of what if this thing became alive.
Yeah.
And they're more not as fun, because they're always like, oh, I fell in love with this robot, or it's this robot wants to go discover itself. Mm-hmm. That's the thing about Johnny Five. After half of the first movie, he just knows who he is. And then the second movie is just him again. Like, you know what I mean? He doesn't learn more. He's still the same guy in the first movie, from the first movie. I mean, he became more punk in the second movie. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they're just going to fuse the two movies together to do this reboot where we're going to get rid of the goop. You know, the Gutenberg's not coming back for the reboot.
He could have a cameo.
He didn't even come back the second one. He was too good for Johnny Five. I couldn't understand that.
Enough time has passed. I'm sure he's probably like, whatever.
I just want to know if they're going to keep, like, I think the iconic part about Johnny Five is, like, the head. It was very expressive for a robot.
Yeah.
I don't know why they gave him eyebrows. It's just so weird to see a robot with eyebrows. Just like, why?
He could have, like, the new one could have, like a hologram face or something. I'm sure they could probably just, like, do, like, some sort of, like, something, like, he has, like, an LCD screen or something on his face now or something, like.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see them taking the robot idea. It's just, it's hard to think Short Circuit and not think of, like, the skeletal frame that he had, the, like, radio face.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll see what this new Short Circuit's all about. They have screenwriters right now. Apparently, the only detail they said so far is it's going to have a Latinx
cast
or like update. Like, to me, that's gonna be like the update style. So maybe like Johnny Five's friends will be like like Latinx actors now or something.
So he's like Jose Five, Jose Cinco.
Oh man! I don't know. We'll have to find out. Hopefully get some more details soon on that. So other news, we learned also I think late last week that Disney Plus is getting a Darkwing Duck show. Although it's not clear if this is going to be a wholly original new show, or if it's going to be a spin-off of the new DuckTales. Because the new DuckTales has been very regularly featuring Darkwing Duck, up to the point where, like, this current season had, like, a full-on episode that was just a Darkwing Duck episode. But this news about this reboot doesn't mention the new DuckTales at all, so it seems like it could possibly be, like, its own new thing, which would be, I guess, that would be, like kind of weird. If it wasn't tied to DuckTales, but
because is it supposed to be like a spiritual story where Darkwing Duck is no longer the actor?
Are you talking about like DuckTales or like this reboot? Because there's no details about the reboot. The DuckTales version is that like Drake Mallory is like a is like a super fan of like, because in the new DuckTales universe, like Darkwing Duck is basically like the 60s Batman show,
right? That's what I saw, right, where it's just like, because they go to like a convention and he's just there.
Yeah. And yeah, so and basically like Drake Mallory is like the biggest super fan of Darkwing Duck, but then through like the wacky misadventures of DuckTales, he becomes Darkwing Duck.
He's an old man Darkwing Duck, right?
Yeah.
Or no.
Well, there's the original actor who played Darkwing Duck, who's voiced by Jim Cummings, the original Darkwing Duck, obviously.
Okay.
And then there's a new character who is like gets hired to like, because there's like the first big episode for Darkwing Duck on DuckTales was like they were like making like Scrooge was like financing like a Darkwing Duck movie. And it was like they had a really great like Christopher Nolan parody of like this director that came on. It was like, I'm gonna make it dark, and he's not even gonna be Darkwing Duck at all in the movie. and then basically like fired him, and like Dewey and Launchpad basically directed the movie. But basically, yeah, they hired this actor who's like the biggest like Darkwing Duck expert / fan to be the new Darkwing Duck, and then there was like this whole thing where like the original actor went nuts and was like trying to destroy the movie, and then he basically became Nega Duck. But yeah, the new actor who is Drake Mallard is like he's actually Darkwing Duck now, and they had a whole episode of this most recent season that was basically like a pilot. It felt like a pilot or what a new Darkwing Duck in the DuckTales universe would be, because it was a full on like it was like Gosling was back. They had like Quacker Jack and Megavolt and everybody in it. So
but they were legit villains.
They were legit, yeah. Drake Mallard was like an actor, but now because he knows so much about like the old TV show, like he is now like a superhero.
Okay, but then it's like the TV show had nothing to do with like the villains from the original show.
I think I'm trying to, because
like unless there's like super fans who just turn out to be the villains, you know, that's just weird too.
I think everyone's a clone of the TV show. I think there was something where like there's something happened and like the TV villains appeared in like the DuckTales universe or something.
I see. Okay, because that's like I get like the guy being inspired by Darkwing Duck and taking up like the real mantle from the comic, but I'm pretty sure like whoever owned the rights to Darkwing Duck in that world just sue that superhero. Like you can't just become like, you know what I mean, like no one in the real world could just become Batman and just be like, well, I'm Batman because I saw it in a comic in these movies. You're like, Warner Brothers is going to come after this person.
Yeah.
Granted, like, in our world, we don't even have, like, real superheroes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We had Phoenix Jones, but he got arrested for drugs.
Yeah. But as far as this Disney Plus reboot, though, definitely no word on if it's DuckTales related or not. Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are producing it.
They can't stop producing.
They're producing everything now. Yeah, everything is just a Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg production now. And that's pretty much it. Like, at some point, we're getting a new Darkwing Duck cartoon on Disney Plus in some capacity. If it's really DuckTales or not, we'll have to find out. Hopefully it is like a. Like DuckTales spinoff, because that would be very bizarre if like DuckTales featured Darkwing Duck and then it's just like, and there's this other Darkwing Duck thing that's not related to DuckTales, so get confused.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm like, oh, is they just like the idea of Darkwing Duck again, or are they gonna connect it to DuckTales? Because I'm fine with the DuckTales version because they already did a pilot, like you said. So why not continue it? But then the launch pad's gonna be bizarre, where it's like, who's his sidekick now?
Yeah, it'd be like, oh, the Mandalorian. It's Star Wars, but it's its own Star Wars universe. It doesn't have anything to do with any other Star Wars things.
Like, right. It's just like, oh, by the way, the Vader's still alive walking around. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah. We'll have to wait and see what's going on with this. Hopefully we'll get some details soon. And then last bit of news, keeping it in the Disney realm. We're getting a live action Lilo and Stitch.
Jeez, come on, Disney.
The remake train just keeps rolling through the station. John M. Chu, who directed Crazy Rich Asians, is going to be directing this new live action Lilo and Stitch. I would have to assume like Stitch and all the aliens are going to be CG. I wonder like. Like, we were talking about, like, Tom and Jerry were like, can you imagine, like, super realistic Stitch?
I'm fine with it, because, you know, it's Stitch's design is already crazy. Mm-hmm. And I've also seen, I've been to Disney World when they had the Stitch, like, Great Escape ride, where they had a puppet Stitch.
The vastly inferior to Alien Encounter ride.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I already seen what that could look like, and it's okay. Like I could see it be very. I don't know. I could see it being very proper, because, you know, no one's going to complain that it's too real or too cartoony, unless it's, like, a horrific, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit again, and it's just, like, a cartoon Stitch.
Yeah. I'm sure there's probably, like, someone probably made, like, a fan art or something of, like, a super realistic Stitch. I'm just, like, I can't, like, just, like, it, like Lion King style, where it's, like, super, like hyper-realistic lions, now it's just, like, hyper-realistic Stitch. We still supposed to be, like, lovable and, like, wacky.
Yeah, it's like, if you make it too real, you're just like, wait, this little girl is, like, hugging this thing?
Yeah. But yeah, so John M. Chu directing, it's not clear if this is going to be a theatrical release or if it's going to be, like, a Disney Plus exclusive, and, like, they just started working on the screenplay, so... But this is also the second John M. Chu project that he's doing for Disney Plus. He's also directing the Willow TV show that's coming soon, Disney Plus. So John M. Chu's like firmly cementing himself into like the Disney Plus structure.
Family.
Yeah. And then no release date on this either. So probably a couple years away from seeing Lilo and Stitch, but I think there's plenty of live action reboots that are still like between now and then. There's like Disney's just not stopping on those. Like Lion King 2 is coming.
Mulan 2.
Maybe. we don't know. We still don't know how Mulan did as far as like if the premium access worked or not, but I think there's like a new Peter Pan, like based on like their Peter Pan, like coming. I think there's I'm pretty sure there's like a Little Mermaid, live action remake coming.
I mean, I feel like how's that not a first movie? Same thing with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Oh, there's a Hunchback of Notre Dame live action remake in works too, and then Robert Zemeckis is making a Pinocchio. There's a Hercules, like pretty much every Disney anime movie is gonna be remade in live action soon. So get ready for that. Oh yeah, the Robin Hood, I think they're gonna do like. They're like Lion King style, where they're gonna be like more realistic foxes, but then it's still like Robin Hood. So yeah, hopefully, if you're a fan of those live action remakes, get ready for a ton more on Disney Plus and possibly in theaters as well. So that's it for news this week. So why don't you jump into show and tell? And Chris, did you see it over the last week or so here?
Been trying to like watch a lot more Star Wars related stuff just to get ready for Mandalorian. And my family wanted to like watch Star Wars stuff, so we just ended up marathoning like throughout the week, like episodes 1 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot how weird the first Star Wars is.
How bad?
It's bad, but it's not as worse as I thought it was. But it's still very weird. Like, it's very political. Palpatine's plans still make no sense. Because his idea was to start a war so he can go from, like, senator to chancellor.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then the second one was go from chancellor to supreme chancellor. And then from the second one to the third one, he goes from supreme chancellor to emperor.
Well, I think in Phantom Menace he became Supreme Chancellor, because he had Supreme Chancellor Valorum.
He kicked out Valorum.
Yeah, because so Palpatine had Queen Amidala do the vote of no confidence in Valorum, and then they elected basically the sympathy vote of like Naboo being under attack let Palpatine become the Supreme Chancellor, and then in Attack of the Clones, Palpatine has Jar Jar lead the vote to like give him like emergency war powers. That's like the downfall of like now I have like these special like I keep getting like all these like special powers of because we're in war times now. And then it's like Revenge of the Sith is like, well, now I'm the Empire, and now I'm making this an Empire because the Jedi tried to kill us all.
Right, right. And that's the escalation. But his plan to do that is just so convoluted with like, you know, Darth Maul, Darth Sidious,
the Nemodians, like the Trade Guild, the Trade Federation, and all those other guilds, and
yeah, who he then betrays because he has Aang and like go kill them all.
Yeah.
But then it's like they brokered peace, so this was unnecessary. But you just like to tie up loose ends, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think New Gunray is more in the TV show, but in the movies, he only has about like an hour worth of screen time. Like New Gunray is just like I forget he's like a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know the TV show. He's more featured, but in the movie, he just like stands around, and yells at things.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a little bit more in like Clone Wars, I guess. Like he's not like constantly featured, but there's like arcs where like they're like, oh, we find out where Nuke Gunray is, we're gonna go capture him.
Oh, we messed up again. Ha ha, he got away.
Yeah, basically once Count Dooku shows up, it's like he's the man. Like it's Dooku and Grievous are like the two guys running everything.
So, yeah, like, three definitely is my favorite of the original, prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Definitely an issue I see is that the first movie kind of makes the story a little weaker because you have a lot of buildup, but, like, no payoff. You know, like, it really is unnecessary to watch if you had to watch, like, a cut. You know, it's like you could skip episode one completely.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because, like, the war for Naboo was, like, really, like, two fights, and then it's, like, over.
Yeah, land battle, space battle.
Yeah, I don't understand how... And the thing about the space battle, it was, like, all the men were there already. They just had to get to the ships.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't even like a bigger, like they didn't need another platoon from another planet. It was just what's on the planet right then and there.
Yeah.
Like they got no help from anyone else.
Yeah, they didn't need like an entire battalion of clone troopers.
And then it's like they went for like, no, they that's the thing. So like they went to the Senate to plead for help for Naboo, right?
Yeah.
And the Senate did nothing.
Yeah, they're like, oh, the Trade Federation's blockade's legal. They can just, so the Trade Federation can just, like, blockade whatever plan they want, basically, like, it's like, perfectly fine with everybody.
Because it's not an act of war, I guess?
I guess so. But they're not.
Yeah, if you block a trade route, it's like, that's an aggressive act. I mean, like, you know, like, countries in America, you can't do that. You can't just block someone's trade route.
Yeah.
But you can in this movie, like you can in, you know, I don't know. It's like it's weirdly political, but then it's like as soon as the second movie, like let's never talk about this again.
Yeah.
So it just stuck with me because the Clone Wars, I don't mind it. The second movie, I just know like
Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones, sorry, but the Clone Wars itself, like the CGI movie that came out.
Oh and then, my god.
I forgot that plot.
It's so crazy how bad the Clone Wars movie is, and then how like great that show got by the end. Because the last couple seasons of Clone Wars are some of the best Star Wars stuff ever. And but yeah, that first movie is just like so god awful. But yeah, I mean, Attack of the Clones is definitely better than Phantom Menace, and like all the Obi-Wan stuff is really good, and all the Anakin stuff is the worst thing ever. Like, Obi-Wan's, like detective investigation stuff is all pretty fun. And like, Jango Fett and...
I mean, Jango Fett is just, like, underutilized.
Yeah.
I think, only because the lore is greater than one episode.
I mean, he does more than his son, but...
Yeah, but I read the comic that was him proving to himself to Dooku that he's worthy to be cloned, like, a million times.
Well, there was a Dark Horse, like, origin story, like, hunting grounds, I think, or something hunting season, I think, is, like, the Jango Fett story. And then, Bounty Hunter the game was, like, that whole game is, like, basically proving to be, like, I'm the clone template.
Oh, there was a comic that I read, not the game. I actually never played Bounty Hunters, the game.
You ever played Bounty Hunter? Oh, man.
I haven't, but it's, like, I think they did a remake, or they ported it to something.
Yeah, you can play it on, like, PS4 now and stuff.
I wonder if it's better to play now.
It's not bad, but it definitely has issues, like the camera and, like, lock-on stuff is that, like, it gets, like, if you lock onto someone and then, because, like, Jango, he can do, like, all these, like, crazy, like leaping moves, like, flips and stuff, and the camera just goes nuts. It just goes fucking crazy, like...
Did you rent it or did you buy it?
I think I got it for, like, Christmas or something when it came out, or, like, birthday or something.
I remember it was, like, a limited run game, and I was like, maybe, and I just forgot, because, there's, like, no marketing for it. After the initial release, it's just, that's it. But, yeah, like, again, as a Star Wars fan, I like it, because it really does play better, like, over time, because you know what the references are, what you've seen it. And then in later Star Wars things, it pays off. That's the thing I like about the Star Wars series, that it pays off for, like, paying attention to all the details.
Yeah.
Very few media can do that.
Yeah, I feel like most of the, like the meme love of the prequels now, it basically all comes from, like, Revenge of the Sith. Like that. I don't think there's not a lot of memes coming from, like, Phantom Menace or Attack of the Clones. It's all, like, all the memes that people love from, like, the prequels are all, like, Palpatine memes from, like, Revenge of the Sith.
That is true. He has some crazy lines.
Yeah. Like, have you ever told you the story of Dark Plagueis, the tragedy of Dark Plagueis, and, like, unlimited power, and...
I am the Senate.
Yeah, I am the Senate, and... I have the high ground, like, all the memes come from Revenge of the Sith. Like, Revenge of the Sith is, like, the best story-wise, but also, like, the best for just, like, wacky catchphrases and, like, insanity. Well, it's, like,
best out of context, like, yeah. Sayings.
Mm-hmm. Are you gonna rewatch Rogue One
before? I've seen it, like, a while ago, so, like, yeah. I like the spinoff movies, and Rogue One was actually one of my favorite, like, Star Wars things before Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm. If you consider that, I mean, obviously it is a prequel because it takes place, but it takes place, like, what, a day before A New Hope or something. Yeah. But yeah, like, that's the best prequel, in my opinion. Like, I like that one the best of, like,
any of the prequel prequels. Story.
Yeah. Gonna watch Solo again.
You know, I've only seen parts of it.
You never saw all of Solo?
I've never seen it all the way through.
Oh, man. It was definitely better than I think we all thought it would be, but, like, it's not the best Star Wars movie. It's definitely better than the prequels, like the first prequel trilogy, but it's not definitely not as good as Rogue One or something.
Yeah, Rogue One is, like, it was too good. It was, like, almost not a Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's about from me. What about you, Zach? What have you been watching?
I watched a bunch of random stuff. So I rewatched The Untouchables in honor of the late Sean Connery, because obviously that was, like, his only Oscar win. He won Best Supporting Actor for that movie.
Really, that's his only Oscar.
Yeah. Great movie. You know, Brian De Palma, so, like, visually amazing. Like, it has that fantastic, like Battleship Potemkin homage, where, like, it's like the baby stroll is like it's, like, falling down the stairs in slow motion, and there's, like, a big shootout happening around it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it just, like, the build up to that, where, like, it's just, like, this, like, ladies, it's just, like, sh- it's, like, 5 minutes of this lady like struggling to get her stroller up the stairs, and Kevin Costner just like is like finally like, all right, I'll help you. I'm looking for this guy. These guys coming to the train station. I'm like a square lawman. So I'll help this like mother bring her stroller up the stairs.
I must do like civic duty and then just like manly duty.
And obviously as soon as he like helps her, then the guys come into the building, and then it's like the big shootout happens. But I will say, rewatching it, like, I don't know if this is Kevin Costner's like strongest performance. Like, I feel he kind of feels a little bit like he's like a kid dressing up as an adult in this one. Like, it's just like, I'm Elliot Ness.
Like, they also like, out of everyone, they have like costume designs. You know, they don't look like they blend in. They all look like they have something they just wore off, like an idea of the clothes.
Yeah.
Because it's like, Kevin Costner's blue suit is so iconic in the sense that when you see it on screen, you're just like, is that just like a costume?
Yeah. I also forgot that like there's only four Untouchables. Like I think you kind of forget you think it's like a whole like squad of guys. It's just like, nope, it's like it's four dudes.
It's like one Kevin Costner just as Kevin Costner.
Yeah, Sean Connery.
You have Sean Connery, who's an ex-cop who...
No, he's an older B-cop. But because he's like, because he never took bribes, and he never took like he never got corrupted, so like he never got like promoted.
But he's also like slightly racist.
Yeah, because it was like what the third? It was the 30s. So. Mm-hmm.
And then Andy Garcia, but he's half something, like he's half Italian or something. So like he's like the wild one.
Yeah, he's like the sharpshooter. Like he like his introduction scene is like him like in the, like, the shooting range, just like hitting every target like with like 100% accuracy. So he's like this like shooting savant. Yeah, and then you have like their accountant guy, who becomes like weirdly adept at like shotguns.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's the big like like one of the other big like set pieces when they go to like Canada to like stop like the like liquor shipment from coming through, and then like their account guy like basically like, single handedly takes down like a truck and like a bunch of guys by himself. With the crazy violence of people get hit like shot with like shotguns in this movie, like they basically like explode.
Yeah, it's like they get hit with a cannon.
Yeah.
Except for Sean Connery, he got shot like,
oh my god,
hundreds of times.
Sean Connery's death is crazy because he gets shot with like basically a full clip from a Tommy gun, and then he's like still alive like hours later. And he's lost like every drop of blood in his body. He's still alive. But yeah, he gives that's his like Oscar moment though, like his like best scene where he's just like trying to like give them the final clue to like catch the like bookkeeper they need to catch to put Al Capone away for tax evasion. Robert De Niro like a great Al Capone too, like he has that like awesome scene where like he's like talking about baseball and then like beats a guy to death with a baseball bat.
Yep. So
yeah, Untouchables, fantastic movie. You haven't seen it, or if you haven't seen it in a while or never saw it, like definitely go check that out, especially to pay tribute to Sean Connery. And then I also watched on Netflix, I saw Welcome to Sudden Death, which is the remake / sequel ? To the Van Damme classic Sudden Death. So this one stars Michael J. White. It's sort of in the vein of like how like Hard Target 2 was, I guess, a sequel to Hard Target, but not really. It's basically just a remake of Hard Target. Like this is like they're saying like in like description.
Yeah, shot remake.
Yeah, well, the description of this was like it's a sequel to the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, but it's essentially it's a remake. It's not good.
Oh,
I would say this is a skip. Like if you see it on Netflix, do not watch it. I mean, even if you're a Michael J. White fan, he's trying his best to carry it. He can't even he can't carry this whole movie by himself. It's like, it's so generic. Like, the villains are so generic. Like, it looks terrible. Like, it looks like a sitcom or something. It looks like a TV show. Like, it doesn't look like a movie.
I thought it was shot on like a cell phone because it looks very like unprocessed.
Yeah, it's it looks bad. It looks very bad. Like, it's not cinematic at all. There's no like memorable set pieces or anything. Like, there's no like none of the character of like the Van Damme movie. Like, the Van Damme movie had like Van Damme fighting a penguin in a kitchen and then like and like using the arena like constantly. Like, there's like constantly like crazy stuff happening where like he's like in like the weight room or like fighting in the kitchen in the arena or like going onto the ice as a goalie and like making the game moving save. And like, there's none of that in this movie. Like, Michael Jai White is they don't really use the basketball arena at all in any interesting way. Is like the most they use is like he like fights a guy in like the weight room of the basketball arena, but then like kill just like slams a guy into like a dumbbell or something and snaps his neck, and that's like it.
Is it like even a good snapback, or is it just one of those like silent like walnut sounds, like, and that's it?
It was just like Michael Jai White like kicks the guy and like he falls backwards and like it, like slams his head against like the bar, the dumbbell, and breaks his neck.
Oh, like an accident kills him?
Kinda, yeah.
It's like not even cool. It's just like, ah, shit, I didn't mean to do that.
But yeah, you know, like Michael Jai White doesn't fight like a mascot. Like, he doesn't like go into the basketball court like make a dunk or anything like that. Like, there's no like none of that fun stuff. Like, it's just like, yeah, like very quick, like simple fight scenes that aren't that great. Even though there is some good like Michael Jai White, like he's very good at like kicking, like Michael Jai White, like he's a very good like martial arts kick guy. Like, he does like a bunch of like awesome like side kicks and front kicks and stuff. Uh-huh. So there's a little bit of that in this movie. But yeah, I mean,
is it just the people he fights that's why it looks bad?
I mean, maybe. I mean, there's like one like fight that like it seems like they actually like did like choreography and like actually like tried to make it look good. Where Michael Jai White fights like three guys at once. But that's like the only like somewhat decent fight scene in the whole movie. And then there's other stuff where like Michael Jai White gets like this like sidekick who's like the janitor at the basketball arena where like the terrorists have taken over. Because they basically, it's basically terrorists take over the like Phoenix, like it's like I don't even know if it's like the like it's like the NBL, so it's like a fake NBA, and it's like the fake Phoenix basketball team that like plays in that arena. So and then like this group of like terrorists take it over, but the terrorists are like ex-CIA agents who got like they like they basically like killed the wrong family. That they thought there was like a family of terrorists, but it wasn't. So then they got exposed and like fired. So they're like disgruntled. And then the like there's like a billionaire industrialist who is like in attendance at the basketball game. And then she's like the kind of one who like spearheaded like the like effort to like get them all fired. So it's like it's revenge slash getting money from this billionaire.
Okay.
It's like their plan, but their plan also is like it has nothing to do with the basketball game. Like, you know how like Powers Booth in the first one was like, oh, you gotta give me this amount of money every
right.
quarter.
He was using he was using the game as like a timer.
Yeah, the score and the timer of the game have nothing to do with anything, any of the plot.
It could be any sports event going on. It didn't matter.
Yeah. It could have been, yeah, it could have been any event, anything. It could have been anything at this like, arena. And it wouldn't have changed anything. So, like, the basketball is, like, very, like, not consequential to anything happening. But, yeah, Michael Jai White gets, like, this janitor sidekick who is possibly one of the worst characters I've ever seen in a movie. Like, he is so... so annoying. Like, he is a cartoon character. He is fucking terrible.
Really?
Yeah. Every line he has is terrible. Every reaction he has is terrible. It is painful to watch him.
No.
And he's,
why?
And he's in it for like 70%, 80% of the movie.
Is this a potential commentary movie night for us?
Maybe. I mean, it's... It's very painful to sit through. So I don't know if it like if he was like a commentary, unless we're like very drunk or something. But like, and it's also like his kids are also like terrible and annoying. Like he has like his daughter who gets like kidnapped by the terrorists. Like she has literally has a gun to her head and she's doing like Z snaps and like going like talking about girl power and stuff. It's like little girl, you have a gun to your head. Don't, this is not the time to be sassy.
So she's just like TikToking and shit, like during a terrorist attack.
Basically, yeah.
Wow.
Like Mike, like the lead terrorist is like holding a gun to her head, and she's just like, "My dad's gonna kick your ass," and she's doing like Z snaps. It's just like, what are you doing? So yeah, it is very, very bad. I would definitely skip it. If you're looking for, like, a Mojo White movie to watch, I would say, like, if you haven't seen, like, Falcon Rising, that was pretty awesome. Or, like, even though he's, like, the bad guy in it, like, Triple Threat was awesome. So, yeah, definitely much better recent Michael Jai White movies out there to watch. So, also, I jumped over to Shudder. And also, so I saw on Shudder, I think it's actually, like, brand new, like, a week or two ago. It's a Shudder exclusive. I watched this movie called Blood Vessel.
Okay.
Which is, it's sort of like, if you remember Overlord from like a year or two ago, the World War II horror movie. So this is also a World War II horror movie. It's set on a, like, Nazi minesweeper boat. And basically, like, this, like, lifeboat full of people who got torpedoed on their own boat. Their lifeboat ends up, like, kind of, like, coming into, like, the path of, like, this, like, Nazi minesweeper. And they're basically they're, like all the survivors are out of food, basically. That so it's they basically just decide like we're gonna take our chances and like board this boat because we're just gonna die in this lifeboat anyway.
So it's better than nothing.
Yeah. So they basically climb aboard this Nazi ship and there's like no one on board and the only thing they find are like bodies on board. So and, so basically like they're trying to figure out what happened and basically it's I mean, it's in the description of the movie. It's also like on like the screen, like the screenshot of the movie and poster and stuff. But like, basically, like the Nazis found like a bunch of vampires. It ties into like the like you know like the Nazis were like obsessed with like the occult and
right,
like
trying, right.
like all these artifacts stuff. So basically, they found like these artifacts in like this castle in like Romania or something, and it turned out to be caskets for vampires, and so the vampires got loose and like basically killed all the crew members, the Nazi crew members, and now they're like after like the survivors.
So it's kind of like Blood Rain, but worse.
You know, it reminded me of like especially like, the design, like the way that like they talk in like Romanian, like it reminded me a bit of like The Strain.
Okay.
Like you know like the FX Guillermo del Toro show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially the design, like the main like father vampire, because it's basically a family of vampires. Like the father vampire, like definitely like he's sort of like Nosferatu a little bit, but he's like his head is like very, it's like much more like bat like. But he does a lot of like Nosferatu esque like hand movements and stuff. And he has like these like very long like fingernail claws and stuff. So, and he also kind of do a thing where like the vampirism is if they bite you, it's kind of like an infection. That like spreads, and then like if the longer it spreads, like the vampires can like control you. So that's also like a thing that like happens to like the Nazi crew members is like a bunch of them got like controlled by the vampires.
Okay, so it's like they become puppets.
Kind of, yeah, basically like the lead vampire can like if he bits you or if you have like the vampire like infection going on inside you, like he can like control your actions and like use it like attack other people or like do whatever he needs to do with you. But yeah, it's a fun like vampire like kind of like B movie. The World War II like stuff is fun and not as good as like Overlord. Like it's kind of more like it's definitely probably like, lower budget and like schlockier than Overlord, but like still ton of fun like fun vampire stuff. Definitely, if you have Shudder, I would say check it out.
Okay.
And then I also saw on Shudder Bad Moon, which I believe was like a 90s werewolf movie. Have you ever heard of it or seen it, Chris?
I have not.
I'm trying to let me just find out like what year came out quick here. 1986. So yeah, mid-90s werewolf movie. Starring Michael Paré from like Streets of Fire and other movies. And this movie, like, it has probably one of the best openings of all time, but then, like, the rest of the movie kind of doesn't live up to the opening. Because it basically opens with, like, Michael Paré and, like, and his girlfriend are, like, in, like, they're, like, photojournalists, and they're in, like, Nepal or, like, the rainforest somewhere. And they're basically, like, they're, like, just, I think they're, like, wrapping up, like, their trip. But they're basically, like, they, like, go away to, like, have sex in their tents, and then a werewolf shows up and, like, attacks them, and so it's like you get to, like, this, within, like, the first 5 minutes, you get, like this, like, 90s sex scene, and, like, then the werewolves start attacking them, and then Michael Paré, like, blows the werewolf's head off with a shotgun, and it explodes the werewolf's head, and then it cuts to, like, titles, and just, you're like, all right.
We're in on it.
This seems awesome. And then the rest of the movie kind of doesn't really live up to that, but, it's okay. Definitely an interesting werewolf design. Like, it's full body, like, werewolf costume that they use, with, like, a kind of like an animatronic, like face and, like, head for it. There's not like a lot after that opening, and, like, I feel like there should be, like, much more, like, or at least a couple more, like, werewolf kill scenes, because you don't really get a lot of werewolf attacking people scenes. It's basically, like, a mystery that we already know the answer to, because we know Michael Paré got bit, and that we know he's a werewolf now, but then the movie's, like, this, like, build-up, like, are they gonna figure out he's a werewolf?
Does he know he's gonna turn into that?
Well, he knows, and, is, like, basically, like, after, like, he gets back to the U.S., like, he's, like, living by himself, but then his sister shows up and is like, hey, you should come live with us, or, like, live in our, like, take your, like, Airstream trailer and live in our backyard. So he does, because he's like, oh, because, like, maybe, like, they find, like, his journal, and, like, his journal's like, maybe the power of love will cure my werewolfism. the love of family.
I'm guessing it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. But yeah, basically every night, like, he goes and, like handcuffs himself to a tree and then turns to a werewolf, and then, like, that's how he prevents himself from, like, going and, like, killing people. But, the main character's movie actually is, like, a dog. like the what? family dog named Thor is basically the main character, because it's based on this book called Thor.
Okay, that makes sense.
Is told from the perspective of a dog, so it's weird for me that's, like, told from my dog's point of view. But yeah, Thor is basically the one who figures out that, like, Michael Paré is a werewolf and is, like, trying to protect the family, and, like, is, like, doing all the, like, is, like, doing all the investigation stuff. It's just, like, but, like, he can't talk or tell people what's going on, so it's just like this, like, he's the only one who knows what's going on, and, like, everyone's just like, what are you, Thor, why are you acting so crazy?
I imagine the dog's writing, which is a human bad, me good.
I think Thor can, like smell the werewolfism on him or something, and then it's like, and then it starts growling at him and, like, attacking him and stuff, and follows him into the woods and sees that he turns to a werewolf, and so like, Thor is doing all the, like, you would normally have, like, a human character, like, investigating and, like, figuring out what's going on, but, like, now you have, so in this movie you have Thor the dog, like, investigating everything, and then the rest of the family, like Michael Paré's sister and his nephew are, like, basically take the entire movie to figure out what the hell is happening. they don't think it's weird, like, Michael Paré is, like, going off jogging, quote unquote, every night,
just hanging at, like, the midnight woods.
Yeah,
coming back with, like, new clothes on.
Yeah. Oh, and also, one of the weird things about this movie, too, is that, so, like, Michael Paré's nephew is played by Mason Gamble, who is Dennis the Menace from the Dennis the Menace movie.
Like a young Dennis the Menace actor?
Like 3 years, 3 years after Dennis the Menace.
Oh, okay. So he's a little older.
Yeah. So that's definitely weird. Like, Dennis the Menace? What?
Yeah, but did his career ever take off?
I mean, he's been in... His last credit was 2010, so, but he was in stuff, like, he was on CSI Miami, he was in, like, Spy Hard, he was in Gattaca, Rushmore.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, oh, Dennis the Menace, I'm like, yeah, I totally forget who that kid is, it's, like, interchangeable 90s kid.
Yeah, Yeah, I didn't really realize he was in anything else besides Test of Menace. I thought he was one of those, like, he was in this one movie and that was it.
And then he got out of the child acting game.
Yeah, or just like they're just like you're not Macaulay Culkin enough. You're like you can't get out of here. But yeah, Bad Moon. It's like a solid, like, I don't know, like B, maybe like C level werewolf movie. Like, it's not like, definitely not top tier werewolf movies, but it's like a solid, like, B, like, yeah, like a C level werewolf movie. If you're looking for something to watch on like Shudder and you want to see like a werewolf movie, it's got some fun stuff in it. Or maybe just like watch the opening and then be like, that's good. I wonder if the opening is on like YouTube or something. Just watch the opening, because the opening is the best part of the movie.
But then that's like a whole different lie later when, you know, when you watch the full movie, you're like, it's about the dog.
Yeah,
it's like a twist.
And then last thing is also on Shudder. I watched Cursed. I've seen 4 of the 5 episodes of Cursed Films, which I think was also airing in AMC recently, like after like Eli Roth's History of Horror every Saturday. But yeah, it's a documentary show about like movies that like had like cursed productions or like curses that, like, associated with them. So it's like The Exorcist, The Omen, Poltergeist, The Crow, and Twilight Zone the movie.
Right.
And it's a little weird. The last 3 episodes definitely focus like a lot on like the movies themselves, and like you get to hear like what possibly what caused like disasters. Like you hear from like the director and like kind of like some of the people on like The Crow, and like find out what actually happened to Brandon Lee and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And or like Poltergeist, you get to learn about like
the production people that like
Yeah, like, because there's the whole thing like on Poltergeist about like the skeletons, because they use like real skeletons, and people are like, oh, they use like skeletons from like India, so there's a curse from India on Poltergeist. And there's also the weird thing about like two of the actresses in Poltergeist like died, in like very like bizarre circumstances. So you get to hear like from people about that and stuff. But like the first 2 episodes, like the Exorcist episode and the Omen episode, are like very weird. Like they feel like a different show. They feel like they're like there wasn't enough about the actual movie, so they just like made up. And it's like, well, we're gonna talk about this other thing for a while. So it's like, Exorcist, they talk about like actual exorcisms, and then it's like a guy who's like, I'm an exorcist. Let's go like exorcise the people.
Come join me now.
Yeah. And then like the Omen one is just like even like less about the movie. They're like, oh yeah, there's some weird stuff that happened during the Omen. Let's go talk to like black magicians. Like talk to like like have this guy like curse a movie that's in production right now and see if that's real. Right. Like the Omen one like is like the worst episode. Like that one just goes off the rails as far as like.
I think they didn't have like materials. They just went, oh well, who do we know?
Yeah, and also the thing about like The Exorcist and The Omen 2 is like those movies, like they made them fine. Like nothing really happened on set that was bad. It was just like afterwards they're like there was like people were like, oh, it was cursed, or like there's like a weird curse, or like weird things happened around to people like after they made it. So that's the curse of that movie.
It's like, oh yeah, some people were really suspicious about this movie about the devil.
Yeah. It's like the Omen was there's like weird stuff that happened, like Gregory Peck's plane got struck by lightning on the way to London or whatever. So it's like, oh no, like they don't want God doesn't want us to make this movie. and then some other weird stuff happened to people, crew members and stuff. But the Omen and the Exorcist were like mostly fine. Like as far as like making the movie, like no one died on set or anything.
I mean, that's good. It's not drama, but then it's like, yeah. Okay. It just doesn't make a good story to tell.
So like those two are just like, well, nothing. So like nothing really happened like production wise. So really can't like talk to people about that. So let's just like explore tangentially related things to them. Like the Omen ones, just like they talk to like quote unquote real witches and like real magicians about like, are curses real?
And they're, and, like, asking the audience, because, like, we don't know.
Yeah.
Do you?
And then, yeah, it's just, like, the Omen episode just goes off the rails. Like, it's, like, they talk about the Omen for, like, 5 minutes, and it's, like, and now let's talk about this other thing. The Exorcist one is a little bit more, like, keeps it to the movie a little bit, but, like, that one also, like, by the end, it goes off the rails, too. It was, like, here's this guy who's, like, an exorcist who charged people, like, hundreds of dollars to do exorcisms on them. But, yeah, the Poltergeist, Crow, and the Crow episodes are definitely interesting and worth watching, just to, like, kind of get, like, behind the scenes from people who were actually there when they were making those movies. And I still I need to watch the Twilight Zone movie episode, but, like, I mean, that movie was just, like, oh, man.
That's
like
a cursed movie.
That's the biggest disaster, like, movie history. Like, that was just insanity of what happened in that movie. So, definitely interested to see that episode and see what is going on with that. But yeah, definitely, if you're interested in, like, movie history stuff, I would say definitely recommend, like, the last three episodes, or, like, I'm assuming this Twilight Zone episode is good. I haven't seen it yet, but, like, I'm assuming it's probably more like the Poltergeist and Crow episodes. So I'd say those three, and maybe skip the Omen one. I'm sure there's probably other things that focus more on the Omen and the making of the Omen that you can watch besides this. And, yeah, so that'll do it for me this week, so we can wrap things up. Definitely have a website. We got a bunch of stuff up there. Comic reviews. We're going to have our game box 2.0 for November up pretty soon, so you can see what games you've checked out this last month or so. We're going to have a very special Thanksgiving commentary up next week, so definitely come to the site on or around Thanksgiving and watch along with us as we watch a special movie for Thanksgiving. And, yeah, head over to the site. All the regular stuff's up on the site as well, so head over to check all that stuff out. And for Chris, I am Zach, and we will see you, actually not next week, but in 2 weeks.
For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, @EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.